I'm Nathan McCoolidge. I'm a PhD student at Carnegie Mellon. I'm also director of system architecture at YinzCam. And I'm here today to talk about our experiences scaling our mobile video and replay system and the sort of the design challenges we faced and how we overcame them over the last couple of years. So before we jump into the details, if you went to a Pittsburgh Penguins hockey game in about 2008 and you had one of the upper level seats, this is the kind of view you might have of the event. And what you see there is, you know, you can sort of see the ice, you can see what's going on in the game, but the players are pretty small. You know, it's a hockey game and the puck is pretty much not even visible. And you know, this is a big challenge that that venues have, that sports teams have, is, you know, when the fan goes to a game and pays money for a ticket, and this is the kind of view they have, it's cheaper and it's more comfortable for them to stay at home and watch the game on TV and get the best camera angles in the house, right? So, you know, we thought about this, and we realized that there's actually some unique content available inside of the arena that's not really available on TV. And these are some unique camera angles. So, for example, there's a couple cameras on the Jumbotron around the rink up in the press box. And we thought, well, can we use these cameras in a unique way to provide a sort of different experience when you're actually at the game, and that would keep people interested in coming to games instead of staying at home? So we started a research project at Carnegie Mellon in 2008 to do just this, and we actually deployed this at the Mellon Arena for the playoffs that year, the Stanley Cup playoffs. That is actually the last year the Penguins won the Stanley Cup. And this is one of the photos that we took of the of our system in action, and fans loved it. And any fan with a Wi-Fi enabled smartphone that year could go to the game, watch live cameras, watch instant replays of all the action on iPhone, BlackBerry, and Android. So, what's YinzCam today? Well, we have 9 million users. We've built over 55 mobile apps across 8 sports leagues. Our apps not only have live video and instant replays, they also have stats, news, media about the team. And you can see our number of clients has grown exponentially since our 2008 season. So just to give you an idea of what our apps are today, and you know, some of you may have seen some of our apps in the past, but this is our NFL mobile app, some screens from it, and you can see that there's news, media, statistics about the team. This is the Falcons app in particular, the Atlanta Falcons. And then on the right, we have our in-stadium features, and the user can go here, look at all the camera angles available, choose one, and then at the bottom there, the app will show a full screen video of live action during the game. So how does all the magic happen? Well, it's actually pretty simple. There's a sporting event that there's cameras, they're generating video feeds. There's a video capture server that takes the broadcast video and encodes it as a basically an IP video stream. That stream is distributed to a media server, which we call the live streaming server, that serves streams to devices on demand. And then a replay cutting server that takes segments of that video, stores them as files, and then serves those files on demand as clients request them. And then sort of managing all this, there's a person on site working behind a ops workstation that's sort of connected directly to all these machines, keeping an eye on them, you know, and actually cutting replays of the game during the game. So, you know, we had one installation in 2010. In 2011, we started selling this to more clients, specifically in the NFL. In 2011, we had 4 installations. In 2012, we had added 8 more. We had 12 installations, and we also started doing some work on the cloud. And then in 2013, this year, we're up to 18 in-venue installations. And what I really want to talk about is sort of the scale of our operations has grown significantly. And you can see in this list, and you probably recognize some of the teams here, and this sort of shows the wireless networks that they have in the stadium, the seating coverage that we service, and the year that they came on board. And so going behind the scenes a little bit on game day, here's what we do. We serve this live video and instant replays to thousands of users. It's very bandwidth-intensive content. We have 18 installations at professional sports venues today with 60,000 to 80,000 seats per venue. We do content delivery over multiple wireless networks, Wi-Fi, and DAS, which is a high-density, high-capacity cellular network. And we often service multiple concurrent sporting events. So if you can imagine on NFL Sunday, there may be 4 to 6 games going on at once. And so what I'm really here to talk about is the challenges of scaling this up from 1 to 18 deployments. And just sort of a broad overview of what these challenges are. First, the resource-intensive content creation and delivery. Encoding requires a lot of compute. Streaming video requires a lot of bandwidth, and then we have all the challenges of dealing with wireless networks. Second, game time environments are very high pressure. So that means, when issues happen, the team is aware of it immediately, and they expect immediate response to failures, and they expect us to fix it quickly. Third, we have several geographically diverse installations all across the United States. And finally, fans want real-time access to content. So they're actually there watching the game. They know when things happen. And they want to watch a replay of the game event on their phone almost immediately after it happens. And we're also competing with the scoreboard crew at the game, because if they put it up on the scoreboard before it's in the app, well, they're just going to watch it on the Jumbotron, right? So we have to get it into the app quickly. So that leads us to really 3 design questions that we had to answer in scaling up this system over the last 2 years. First, how can we concurrently manage multiple geographically diverse systems on game day in a cost-effective manner? Second, how can we quickly and accurately generate replays of game footage? And third, how do we distribute content via both Wi-Fi and DAS at the same time in some cases, while using bandwidth and compute resources efficiently? So for the first part of the talk here, I'm going to talk about this first question. So when we were doing operations on site for every game, there were quite a few challenges with scaling this up to 18 deployments. First, the distraction-filled work environment. So when you're at a game, executing game day for a venue requires the orchestration of several different operations and has to go well. And that means there's people running around, it's very hectic, very high pressure. If something goes wrong with one of our systems and we have one on-site operator and that guy is tuned in and cutting replays for the game, if something goes wrong, that guy has to jump off of cutting replays to fix the problem. And that means replays don't get cut. And that means, fans are missing out on that content. And that's not very good. We also have inefficient communications with our headquarters back at our Pittsburgh office. So if the guy's in the stadium and the stadium cellular coverage isn't good, and you've probably experienced that at one time or another, there's no easy way for us to communicate across all of our installations on game day. Third, with a single operator on site, and this is sort of what I was talking about earlier, the workload can't be shared in an emergency. So if there's a problem, nobody else can fill in to cut replays. And finally, the travel expenses really pile up. We have to fly somebody out to every site to work the game. There's transportation costs, food, lodging, and so on. So just to give an idea of how this would scale had we continued to do on-site operations up through this year, I sort of created a graph of the number of operations days the number of days we would have had to have somebody on site at a venue per season. So when there's one installation, there's not many days where we had to have somebody on site. There was, you know, we had a had our pilot deployment. It wasn't active for every game, and it was right in Pittsburgh, so it was fairly inexpensive. In 2011, though, we took on four new installations, and we had to fly across the country to San Francisco, for example, for every one of their home games. And we continued this into 2012, where we added eight more installations. The costs just keep increasing. 2013, and you know, in the future, who knows? You know, it could have gotten out of control. And if you imagine, you know, maybe there's only, you know, saying, you know, 300 operations days. Well, considering it takes maybe $1,000 to $2,000 to fly somebody across the country and back, you know, the cost can quickly add up. So we had a couple ideas on how to fix this. First, if we centralized and located our operations in a single remote location, that actually solves a number of problems. It eliminates the distractions from the on-site environment. It allows efficient communication between operations staff, so they're right, everybody's right there in the same room, and they can cover for each other. And also, there's a significant reduction in travel costs because nobody is on site. There's just a one-time setup, and then all the operations can be done remotely. But okay, so you move operations remotely, but then how do you access the resources? So that's the second part of the problem, is providing reliable access to remote resources. So we set up a VPN to provide secure connectivity between all of our sites. That has the added advantage is that we can monitor our content remotely. So we're only allowed to publish content inside of stadiums, inside of venues, because of licensing restrictions. With a VPN, we can play that content over our VPN without breaking those licensing restrictions. And third, we actually use a peer-to-peer VPN for redundancy and failover. So just to give you an idea of how we, you know, how we set up our VPN, originally we had all of our installations sort of isolated, isolated entities. And what we did is we connected them all using Amazon Web Services as sort of a rendezvous point for nearby installations. So we set up VPN endpoints in Amazon's US East and US West regions, and we connected each installation to the nearest AWS region, and then made connectivity between the two regions. And that allows us to access any of these installations from any machine connected to our VPN. That changes our architecture a little bit inside the stadium. So now, instead of having an in-venue ops workstation, we can have a remote ops workstation that's outside of the venue, communicates to inside the venue using a VPN connection through a management gateway that then facilitates the communication with the other servers inside the stadium. So going back to our operations costs, just to see how this actually played out, in 2011 we made that choice. We could either, you know, follow the green line and maybe go bankrupt just because of operations cost, or we could change the way we do our operations and avoid that. So in 2012, our costs actually went down a little bit, and that was because we're only going out to the site for one-time installation, and then that's it for the rest of the year. In 2013, same thing. Just go out there once, and our costs dropped even more. And we anticipate, even if we add more deployments with just a one-time upfront on-site installation, our costs aren't going to rise significantly in the future. So now that we have sort of a way to scale up our operations. Second, how can we quickly and accurately generate replays of game footage? So here's the fan view of instant replays. And you know, these are just screens from the app. The fan, once they're inside the venue, goes to the live video and highlights section, pulls up the highlights list, and then can watch the replay after selecting camera angle. What I really want to draw your attention to, though, is the second screen that shows the highlights list, and the user can sit there during the game, continually refresh this list, and get the latest list of highlights. So they're constantly tuned in. But originally, we had a very manual replay cutting workflow that went something like this. An interesting event occurs in the game. The operator would click a button after the end of the event. And then we had a tool that let them scroll back in time through the video to find the start of the event. Once the start and the end were found, they would click another button. The system would produce a video file. Once the video file was done encoding, the operator would annotate it with metadata, so they would come up with a title, a description, and so on. And then finally, the system would publish the video in the mobile app. Well, what's wrong with doing this? So the visual search through the stream to trim the replay was time-consuming, it was error-prone, and it was repetitive. And, you know, some of our operators might have even found it boring after a while. With manual metadata generation, once the video was done encoding, the operator actually had to think about what to title the replay, what description to give it, and so on, and that also takes time. This process required full operator attention, so distraction means more delays in producing replays, and maybe we'd even lose some. And finally, there was no real possibility for pipelining in this system. The operator could focus on one replay at a time, and that was it. So how can we sort of fix this and get some of this manual operation done a little bit faster? So we realized two things. One, we should use resources for what they do best. Machines are well-suited to repetitive tasks, things like approximating the boundaries for replays, encoding video, and so on. But humans perform well on doing visual tasks. So, you know, verifying that a replay is cut correctly is very easy for a human to do. Second, if we're going to automate a system, we should allow a operator to override automated decisions, because in any automated system, some decisions are going to be incorrect if there's errors in the data and so on. So we use a human operator to verify each replay and provide a management tool that allows the human operator to override automated replays. So that leads us to the automated replay cutting architecture that we design to do this. And there's actually two data feeds that are coming out of the sporting event. One is the video, and we already sort of talked about that. The second is statistics about the game. And we developed a set of timing rules that allows us to estimate the start and the end times for every replay of the game. So we have a replay manager component that gets the list of events of the game, and also the timing rules provide it with estimates of the start and the end time. Those estimates are fed to the video cutter, which segments the continuous video stream into discrete chunks that eventually become replays. Once the replays are cut, there's a replay list service that pulls the list out of the replay manager and serves it up to the smartphone, and you get the list of highlights that you saw a little bit earlier. And once a fan selects one of the replay files, there's another web service that goes and grabs those replay files off of storage and serves it to the smartphone. So everything in the blue box runs inside the venue. It can actually run entirely independent of human operators and everything else. But we also provided, through the VPN we talked about earlier, a management dashboard that allows the operator to override these manual decisions. And it looks something like this. It's an entirely web-based tool. You see there in the list, there's a list of all the plays of the game. This is sort of the end of a Bulls basketball game. For every replay, the operator can open up the details, watch the replay from every feed, and also edit the replay on the right-hand side by dragging that slider and clicking cut. And so this works really well. And we can sort of see that by an experiment we did where we compared our manual and automated workflows. And the way we measure this is called mean time to app, or actually just time to app. And that is from the time that we receive information about the event from the game stats provider to the time it actually appears in the app ready for fans to watch. And we could break this down into three stages. There's the search stage, where the operator or the system is searching for the start and the end times on the replay. There's the encode phase, where it's actually taking the video and creating a replay file. And then there's a publish phase, where the metadata about the replay is stored in our database. And just by automating the search phase, we've got the average time for finding the start and the end of our replays down to 1 second from 30 seconds. And that translates to an 84.3% reduction in time to app overall. So that brings us to our third design question, and that is, how can we distribute this content via both Wi-Fi and DAS while using bandwidth and compute resources effectively? So just to sort of motivate why we're doing DAS, in 2012, we got some interest from the Indianapolis Colts about using the new DAS system they installed at Lucas Oil Stadium. And we went out there and did that deployment, and then several other follow suit. And now in 2013, about a third of our installations use DAS in some way. So if you look at a high-level view of our system, really what happens is there's video coming in from the game, there's some magic that happens, and then on the Wi-Fi network, you have your app, your phone connected, you pull up the app and you can get the video. So if we add another wireless network, such as an in-venue or cellular network or DAS, I mean, can we just do the same thing? I mean, that was our initial thought. But we went and talked to engineers from some of the cellular carriers, and we said, hey, is there some way we can directly connect over IP from our servers inside the stadium to the DAS that you've deployed? And the answer was, no. We're not letting you do that. And so we talked to them, and we realized that really the only way you can get data to smartphones connected to the DAS is over the internet. So okay, so how do we do this? Well, we have to get it out of the venue somehow. But the problem here is that the uplink bandwidth that can be afforded for our service is only a small fraction of what they have to offer. So we can't just serve the devices directly. So those are really our three challenges. One, how do we get the video out of the stadium, out of the venue? Once it's out of the venue, what do we do with it? And then third, once we've done something with it, how do we get it back to the in-venue cellular network? So there's three key ideas here. The first is video streams can be easily duplicated and cached. So a video stream is just a bunch of data going over TCP or UDP. If we set up a proxy server that takes the stream and splits it to all connecting clients, that's sufficient to duplicate the stream. Second, segments of video are served over HTTP, so standard HTTP proxies can be used to cache our video data. Second, public clouds have ample bandwidth. You pay per gigabyte, but the amount of bandwidth is practically infinite. Third, our infrastructure is ideally suited to the cloud. On game days, so in the NFL, there's one game per week, and really around the time of the game, our system only needs to be up for about 5 hours, and it really doesn't even need to exist the rest of the week. Second, the cloud affords us a rapid scale up and scale down on demand. So we often see a big spike in load on game day. Well, the cloud allows us to scale up our systems for game day traffic and then scale down later. So that led us to our Wi-Fi DAS hybrid architecture. Now, down in the left corner, you can sort of see the part of the system that I showed earlier, where we have the video source going to a video capture machine and so on for the Wi-Fi side, but we've made a few changes here. One is a copy of the stream gets uploaded to the cloud, and this is okay because it's only one copy of the stream. If we had done several copies, say one for each client, that wouldn't have been feasible, but just one is fine. Once it's on the cloud, it's copied to a live streaming server, and then we've also migrated the replay cutting server out of the stadium. And by doing that, we produce all of our content on the cloud, or at least a copy of it, and that copy can be served directly out of the cloud to clients on the DAS system using the bandwidth available there, which is more than sufficient. Also, a copy of the replays and the live streams are then sent to the in-venue Wi-Fi network, which operates just as it did before. So to recap, our system has resource-intensive content creation and delivery. We work in high-pressure game-time environments. We have several geographically diverse installations, and fans want real-time access to content. And in solving these challenges, we learned a few lessons grouped into roughly three big categories. One, remote management of operations is important. So extracting operations from the field environment makes things a lot more efficient and a lot less cost. And when you do that, you need to ensure easy and reliable access to your remote systems. The second is invest in system automation. So try to automate error-prone manual processes. But because all automated systems will sometimes make mistakes, allow human operators to override automated processes. And finally, take advantage of the cloud. The cloud is great for short-term CPU-intensive processes and also bandwidth-intensive processes and services. So thank you again for attending my talk. There's a couple related publications to this, one earlier this year about our auto-scaling, and then the one that will appear at this conference. So thank you.
Okay, again, I'm David Lynn from Vanderbilt University. So Tennessee Titans are in Nashville. They're about three miles from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
Cellular coverage in LP Field sucks. Mm-hmm. So I take this phone down to LP Field. What is it actually connecting to? Is it talking to Sprint, or is it talking to something in stadium?
And
how did I set that up?
Right. So in Sprint's case, with the DAS, the interesting thing about DAS is it's often done on carrier-specific lines. So when a DAS is installed, it's often installed by a single carrier, and not all of the major carriers will be on it at once. I'm not really sure what the situation is at LP Field, but you know, Sprint may not be even on the DAS, although some of the other carriers may be. Right. It's a way for them to have, in-stadium special coverage. It handles a lot more traffic than just, you know, one cell tower, a mile away from the stadium. Yeah.
I'm curious how much you leveraged available COTS hardware and software solutions versus what you developed in-house. For instance, with the video capture, did you use Blackmagic or
yep.
Matrix cards?
Blackmagic cards, yeah.
Okay.
So the capture is done via Blackmagic cards. We do the encoding with, we've used several different software encoders, like FFmpeg, for example.
Right.
Things like that. So, yeah, it's built out of a lot of sort of different components.
You also mentioned the one copy that you stream to the cloud to get it up there.
Right.
Do you use commercial services for that, or do you have your own streaming service?
So the copy is just simply we wrote a little bit of software that takes a TCP stream and just sends it to another endpoint. You know, so now we have the stream going different ways, and that's really all you have to do. There's not a lot of complication there at all.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Just curious, excuse me, what is your support model for remote equipment that you have all over the country?
Our clients take care of it. They actually purchase the hardware and they maintain it. So we don't have to deal with that aspect.